special guest. Call in to be a part of this history-making broadcast. Join LCCC's movement to create vibrant neighborhood conditions for children, for adults, and businesses to thrive socially, academically, artistically, and economically. This is the next episode of Russell on the Move with your host, Kevin Fields. Leading with vision, educating on economic mobility, advancing equity, developing quality.
Good morning, folks, and welcome back to Russell on the Move. This is Kevin Fields, President and CEO of LCCC, bringing you another episode of our weekly community affairs update. And we're just excited today, really excited. And, today we got a big show, first of all. You're going to hear from our special guest in just a moment. But just as a word of reflection and a word of thank you, last week's show, special edition of Russell on the Move, allowed an opportunity to begin to unpack some of the history of what had happened that led up to the Ethics Commission complaint that I was involved in, revolving Councilman Anthony Piacentini, what kind of provoked that complaint and the aftermath of it. And we're still in that process as a community of dealing with it. There's recent news about the Metro Council taking on the decision that they've been recommended to take on with respect to whether or not Mr. Piacentini should be removed from the council. So that is a work in progress. But I just want to say that for me personally, last week was therapeutic. It allowed me to just speak freely to our community, our constituents, our listeners, and that you can know that if you missed that show, that you can still find it. There's a podcast out on our website on lcccnews.org. And as I stated last week, if you care and really want to know, the information is out there. I did post the blog post, as well as the podcast of last week's show, as well as a podcast of a section of the hearing itself, which the part that I was called upon to testify as a part of the hearing, as well as my cross-examination. So I share that again because that, from my standpoint, is the only media that we're going to do that I'm going to do around this issue. There's a lot of media coverage, but our board, I will say kudos to the board of directors at LCCC, because the board has made a public statement and the board members are willing to represent the agency in terms of talking to media. So that being said, we're going to continue this broadcast, and just again, excited about today, because today, I want to acknowledge Herbert Johnson is in the studio. Good morning, Herbert.
Good morning, Kevin. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Today, you know, we hear you talk a lot, Herb, about education. And I know you're a passion for education. So we got an education guru with us today in the form of Dr. Geneva A. Stark is with us. Can we give her an applause, Brother Vince? Because, you know, to have Sister Geneva here is a treat to me, because I've known her for many years. I'm not going to date me or her, but I've known her for many years. And ever since I've met her, she's been a leader in the education space in our community. And she's more than just an educator. She is a leader, and she's a passionate leader about our community, being the Black community here in Louisville, Kentucky. And she's been a part of this work. So I'm going to welcome to Russell on the Move this Dr. Geneva Stark. Good morning, Dr. Stark.
Good morning, and happy to be here.
Glad to have you. Yeah, so it's exciting, Geneva, to have you in the studio. In this format, we like to take on discussions where we empower our community to learn, but also empower our community to be engaged with you. So our listeners should know that the lines will be open at the 30-minute mark, and you'll have a chance to call in with questions or comments. But we're going to talk about empowerment, and we're going to stay focused on our core theme, economic empowerment. But we also want to talk about what education means in that quest for economic empowerment. So, Dr. Geneva Stark is with us, and we'd like you to get to know her. So we want to ask you, Dr. Stark, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, personally, professionally, whatever you'd like to share.
Okay. Once again, good morning, and thank you for allowing me to be here this morning. I am a native New Orleans, from New Orleans, Louisiana, and I am a servant leader, which means that I believe in mission and vision and being able to give back to the community. I graduated from Xavier University, HBCU, from New Orleans, the University of New Orleans. I received my master's degree and my PhD from the University of Louisville. But more importantly, it's about giving back. It's about being of service. It's about what's in your heart, what's in your soul. And we all are here today because someone helped us along the way. I had the opportunity to compete in track and field, and I competed in the indoor and outdoor from the East Coast in Madison Square Garden, from the indoor national championships to the outdoor championships, you know, in California. And then with that, I was on two relay teams that held national records. So track and field allowed me to be able to travel across this country, to be able to see and to be able to learn and to be able to grow as an individual, but also to appreciate those individuals who poured into me. One of Muhammad Ali's favorite quotes is, "Service to others is the rent that we pay for our room here on earth."
Amen.
Once again, service to others is the rent that we pay for our room here on earth. So these individuals poured into me and several other young ladies, you know, in the Lord Ninth Ward of New Orleans. And as a result of that, I feel a mission and an obligation to be able to give back. My family was servant people. We had a house that everyone came to. So again, giving service, feeding the homeless, feeding anyone who needed help. So that's a part of who I am as an educator and as a servant leader. And I carry that, you know, because that's with a badge of honor, because it's true to me about what I do. I've also served as an educator in terms of my first job was working with special needs individuals. Those individuals who had handicapping conditions or disabilities. And when I looked at that, was a change for me because I began to look at people for what they can do as opposed to what they can't do. You know, and more often than not, we're looking at individuals from a deficit mindset about what they can't do as opposed to what they can do. So in coming to Kentucky more than 25 plus years ago, I was a teacher at T.T. Knight Middle School, and I went on to become an assistant principal at Weston High School for 2 years, and I was a high school principal at Weston High School for 8 years, 10 years in Lively Shively, was some of the best years of my educational career because I got a chance to be able to mold and to groom and to pour into individuals. You know, and also we had the first newcomer academy in Jefferson County Public Schools, but we had people from all over the world that came to that school. And I shared with them that you're not a visitor here. This is your school. I want you to know that this is your school. And I shared with the staff, you know, we want to make sure that everyone feels welcome, that there's an inclusion mindset, you know, here in this building that we feel a part of. We feel like we are a family. And that comes with an intentional effort. And as a result of that, 15 plus years later, we have a database of over 90 plus people, students, staff, and, you know, administrators and teachers that come together. And there's someone who holds that that database, and we get emails once, twice, three times a week about how we are helping and serving and continue to serve each other. That comes with intention.
Mm-hmm.
Our world needs love.
Amen.
With the culture and climate of our country today.
Amen.
Yeah. We need love, you know, but we also have to continue to have hope because we can get disillusioned by what's happening in our country. And we cannot lose, you know, sight of that. And so from Weston High School, I went on to become a central office administrator in human resources for 14, 15 years in Jefferson County Public Schools. Then I ended my career in Jefferson County Public Schools working in the Diversity, Equity, and Poverty Department. I worked with the racial equity policy. I've trained individuals or provided professional development with individuals on the racial equity analysis protocol. What does it mean to be inclusive? I'm also a consultant, you know, that works with diversity, equity, inclusion, and sense of belonging, because those things are near and dear to me. And when we talk about service, I am a member of the National Alliance of Black School Educators. I am the treasurer.
NAPSE. Oh, you said the national.
The National Alliance of Black School Educators.
Because okay. GLAPSE is the local, Greater Louisville.
Yeah, the Greater Louisville Alliance of Black School Educators. I was the president for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went on and the regional representative for that organization that I've represented 9 states. Then I went on to the National Alliance, and I'm the treasurer of that organization. And what, again, it's about service. It's about giving back. And it's about, especially for our children, because more often than not, people are always looking at us from a deficit mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that because we're still segregated in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And we're probably more segregated now than we were in 1965. And as a result of that, when people don't interact with us, 95% of the information they receive is on TV.
Yes.
And of course, when they see what's on TV, what they see is negativity.
Mm-hmm.
They don't see all the positive things that we're doing and the marks that we're making, you know, not only in our community, but also in our country. They don't always see the Kevin Fields or the Dr. Cosby or the different people. They just see the media wants to showcase us in a negative mindset. But with all the amazing things that's happening in our country, we also need to showcase our young people.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
We have a lot of young people that's doing amazing things.
Yeah.
But we don't always
do that. Dr. Geneva, we feel your passion and you being a servant leader. And for as long as I've known you, I know when I first met you during my time of the Urban League, you were working on the same issues and with the same passion and fervor. And, you know, we're just blessed that you're here today because we know you bring a perspective that needs to be heard. And I think the timing of you being here is super important because we just got the scores in again, the state test scores in. I haven't looked at them. I'm going to confess. I normally, and I will, read them just to see where we are, but I already know what it's going to say because it said the same thing since we've ever started taking tests. We got a skills, we got a academic achievement gap. Between blacks and white students. And the question is it getting wider or is it closing? We've been talking about closing the achievement gap for at least the last 30 years that I can remember. So let's talk about challenges in education. And let's talk about it from the black community perspective. What do you think are the most significant challenges that the black community faces in terms of getting our kids educated, getting a quality education for our kids?
One of the things I think we need to take ownership, and that we need, and when I say take ownership, is that we have a responsibility and we can do this, but we also have to know that we come from great stock, people who did more with less. So as a result of that, not only those people in the school building, but at home, we need to take responsibility and say that we have that we want the best for our students. You know that, and what the test scores, and I have not looked at the test scores in totality, but from the news media, the state is that elementary schools are doing better, middle and high schools are doing the same. But when they say doing better, then 35-40% of proficiency or, you know, it's better. But what happened to the other 60?
Whatever, yeah. If 40% is good, they're saying that it's better. So that means better means moving towards something that's good, you can feel good about. But like you said, Herb, what do you think about that? If you run a business and 60% of your product coming off the assembly line, going onto the shelves, is inferior, what would you say about that?
That's a defect. I mean, so you're starting out, you know, in the negative. If 60% of your product or whatever you're serving is, you know, not in standards, so meeting standards. So, you know, the thing that I would say about, you know, education, I noticed yesterday I was reading about Western, and I see Western's improving as far as the academic, you know, scorecard. So that's good, and, you know, appreciate your work at Western, because I have an experience with Western over a couple of years ago. My son finished his last year at Western, so okay. I'm familiar with the programs over there. So at the end of the day, you know, education, like Kevin says, you know, one of my things is it's the vaccine to any community problem that we have, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's more than just the books. It's just about informing the people like you're doing today, you know, about, you know, what's going on in the community and how we can, you know, achieve wealth and, you know, kind of close the gap as far as the achievement. So it's a pleasure, you know, just being here talking about, you know, this topic today. And I look forward to the rest of the show, Kevin.
Yeah, me? Absolutely. So ownership, you said we got to take ownership. Dr. Neven, I agree with you. And, you know, I love Jefferson County Public Schools. I'm a product of Jefferson County Public Schools. My family, wife, son, you know, all of my relatives that I know are products. And we made it through. You know, we survived. And certainly this is an opportunity to acknowledge the leadership there, and certainly the love that we have for Sister Diane Porter is real, and her commitment to education for over 50 years, most of her life, is real. And we're going to certainly thank her and pray for her. And, you know, I know that she stepped down recently, but I know her mind and her heart is still in it. We had her on the show here a few weeks ago, back at the beginning of the school year when we had the school bus debacle, and she came in. And so, Dr. Geneva, you talk about ownership, and who's the ownership need to rest with? And I say it like this. I'm trained as an engineer, and engineers, we think systems, right? You know the black box model of, you know, you got systems, processes that go inside the box, and let's say JCPS is the black box. You got education going on. But then you got inputs and outputs going into that system. Inputs being the children, the teachers, the community, everybody that has a hand in making sure that education works. But then the output is the students and their achievement, right? And so when we continually, persistently have this underachievement, how do we take more ownership in terms of fixing that?
Okay. And when you say ownership, and when I mention ownership, it means that, again, everyone has a role to play in this.
You know,
we need all hands on deck, and not just administrators, but we also need community. We also need parents, and we also need students. And when I say to anyone that I know that has a child, you know, in a school system, I tell parents, you just don't send your child to school. You know, then you make sure you know what's happening in that school building. Then you have conversations, you know, with the teachers, with the administration. In fact, I was sharing with someone this morning that have a one-on-one conversation, attend parent conferences. If you can't be there at that particular time, then find the time to be there, because we are setting an example for our kids when we have input into that educational system, when we show up for them. Because what they're saying is that, to me, what I see is a cry for help in our community. We see kids, I see kids that say, who has our back? Because with everything that's going on, who has their back? Because you and I have grown up in a system where our community was there for us, provided support, provided love, provided guidance. My teachers, track and field coaches, and even just my neighbors provided those opportunities. And so who's providing those opportunities for our students? They don't all come in the world saying that, you know, that I don't want to do. You know, that means that we have to provide opportunities for them to do, for them to not just survive, but to be able to thrive. And that's what we need, because we've seen a number of amazing students, and there are many, many, many more out there. And when we go to juvenile detention centers, or even when we go to the big prisons, we see individuals who have all types of talent. Mm-hmm. But it was one decision or two decisions that deterred them in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And somebody could have had an impact with mm-hmm. that young person along the way. There was a disconnect somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be able to stop the disconnects and be able to re-engage, support, provide leadership, provide guidance, you know, and unapologetically
mm-hmm.
to say that, you know, I want this for you, because, and sometimes we have to help people to see what they can't see. Mm-hmm. Even if that's parents, to help them to see what they can't see. And as Harriet Tubman said, she could have freed many more slaves
mm.
if they didn't think that they were slaves.
Yeah.
Yeah. And right. so we have to be about the business intentionally to be able to help individuals in our community and provide opportunities, you know, for them into grants and different things. And also, as we look at financial literacy,
mm-hmm.
what does that mean? Mm-hmm. We have to be able to educate individuals in a way that's going to be supportive, that's going to be productive, and also provide opportunities for them to see.
Mm-hmm.
I volunteer for the Organization of Black Aerospace Professionals. Mm. That's one of the organizations that I volunteer for.
Are you a pilot?
I am not a pilot.
Aviator.
You know, I am not an aviator, okay. but I'm an educator with a passion.
Amen.
And
amen.
When I heard about this organization, I was like, whoa, you know.
Oh, bad.
How come this has been in law, but I didn't mm-hmm. know about it? And so I sought to be engaged in that program. And what I found is that there are so many different careers beyond being a pilot. But how many of our young people know that? How many of our adults know that?
Mm-hmm.
Many times, oh, I don't want to be a pilot, but there are so many careers
surrounding exactly.
aviation.
But, you know, we're going to talk about opportunities in a minute, but I have one other point around challenges that I want to cover, mm-hmm. and I don't want to put you on the spot with this question, and if you're not prepared to answer it, that's fine. But, you know, we've talked about underachievement as a mm-hmm. as a challenge because, you know, the test scores come mm-hmm. out. And it shows that we have a gap and so forth. But one thing we don't talk enough about, Geneva, is the dropout rate, the actual school dropout rate. And going back to my experience in my days at the Urban League, where I was the education director there, we did research at that time working with JCPS. I remember we had a dropout summit. And in that planning for that dropout summit, we did a lot of research, and I was alarmed at that time to find that the black student dropout rate in Jefferson County was like 40%. And so it's something we don't talk about, and I haven't kept up with it. I'll confess mm-hmm. that. But I wanted to ask you your thoughts about dropouts in our community, especially as it relates to black students, because mm-hmm. I would theorize that a lot of what goes on in our community with juvenile delinquency and crime involving young people might correlate with, you know, either school behavior issues, school suspension data, as well as dropout data. Mm-hmm. But do you have any insights on what's going on with that?
Well, I don't know the numbers. And if we're at 40%, that's alarming, because where are they going to go without skills and education to be able to do anything, you know? And so
at that time, across the board at JCPS was 25%
mm-hmm.
across the board, mm-hmm. all students. We had a 25%. But then when you isolated on race, it was like 40. And I'm like you, I was 4 out of 10 of our kids are not graduating, dropping out. And one of the early indications of that is kids that go into alternative schools, mm-hmm. which is a real number. You know, that's one of the things my son is working on now in his work at JCPS. KJ is helping to kids that are in alternative school mm-hmm. to transition. She's a psychologist by training and working on becoming a therapist, but helping those kids that have been in alternative schools to transition back into the main. But we don't hear enough about those kinds of issues from a community standpoint. And I think that's a need, don't you think, that we need? You talked about ownership. The community mm-hmm. has to know about these things so that we can address them or help the district to address.
You're absolutely right. Now, when I saw that on the news media about the test scores, they indicated that there was an increase in graduation rates, you know, for Jefferson County Public Schools, which is a plus. But I want to make sure that we're just not passing kids along, that we're just not giving individuals diplomas just for the sake of numbers. You know, we want them to be productive in those numbers, you know, but I'm not sure what those numbers are, but that is alarming. And yes, you know, the community should know about those things because we can't address it. We cannot deal with it if we don't know what the numbers are. And when you say 4 out of 10, wow, when you see 10 students, then 4 of them are not graduating. That is a problem. And when we're talking about the crime rate that has escalated, you know, in this community, that is alarming. Because when I came here 25 plus years ago, that was not an issue. And if we had a homicide that happened, they knew about it. They knew within 24 hours, 48 hours, who the culprits were. We were definitely not where we are today. And Louisville was a very, very safe place.
Yeah.
And so I am, you know, concerned with those numbers. But I, again, the community needs to know. But also, not only know, but also it needs to be everyone in the community taking a stance or being a part of the conversation, not just, you know, LCC, not just the Urban League, but the League of Women Voters. We're talking about the Greater Louisville, Inc. We're talking about the business community. You know, we're talking about everyone needs to be a part of the conversation because it affects all of us. We can't just say we're going to leave it to the community agencies. This is a city problem. And we have seen now it has escalated to the point where now people say, I didn't think this would happen in my neighborhood. It is happening all across the Louisville area. So yes. Therefore, it is a problem that we all need to be a part of. And we need all hands on deck and not pointing fingers, you know, but we need to see what can we do about this and put the resources behind it.
Yes, that's it.
Put the resources behind it, but also accountability. Because all too often we just talk and we meet and we meet and we meet. Well, we know what the problems are. The time now is accountability, you know, and some timelines to get some things done.
Well, we want to talk some more with you, Dr. Price. We want to talk about your current work out at the University of Louisville and spend the conversation. We talk about challenges. We also got to spend equal time and energy talking about opportunities because there are tremendous opportunities we know throughout the community and certainly on the university campuses. Mm-hmm. We're going to share that. We're going to take a break in a moment. But before we do, you know, I really want to thank you for coming and being a part of this show because the timing, I think, couldn't be better because we're going to encourage our listeners to pay attention to what's going on around these school test scores, especially if you have children, grandchildren, nieces, nephews that are going to public schools. Take the opportunity to express to them the importance of doing well because these things happen every year, you know. And the thing about these scores that just came out, well, the test was probably done in the spring sometime, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so it's like when you see them, by the time you see the results, it's like crying over spilled milk because it happened months ago. Mm-hmm. So we should be talking about getting kids fired up and ready for the next test round so that they can be inspired to know that there are public-facing results that people see as a result of their school performance, and we just want to look good. You know, from a community standpoint, Black community wants to look good, right? We want our kids to show that they are brilliant, right?
Absolutely. We want them to show their brilliance. We want them to show their talents, but also we want to make sure that kids are just not in school for a test. You know, because they have talents, we want them to take advantage of all the opportunities that's afforded to them. And we want to make sure that those opportunities are there. So if you have students who have the talent to be in AP class, you know, advanced placement classes, or who have the talent to be in gifted classes, we want them to be a part of those programs and engage in those programs and all of the many programs that the Jefferson County Public Schools vocational programs that they have in various schools. We want our students to be able to take advantage of those opportunities. First of all, to know that those opportunities exist, because we as a community also have to get away from that students have to go to a 4-year college to be successful. There's a need for bricklayers, mechanics, you know, for HVAC, you know, there's a need for many people, carpenters in our community, but we've gotten away from vocational education. And there's a great need for that. And the mentality is that students have to go to a 4-year college to be successful. They do not, you know. We have JCTC that's doing amazing work. And I went in some of the buildings, I'm like, wow. But how many of our students, how many of our community members know those programs exist so they can be able to talk about those programs to young people to say, hey, well, if you don't have to go to a 4-year college to be successful. I had a plumber to come to my house, and he was there for 15 minutes, and just to show up was $100+. Those opportunities
you can make money.
Are there.
Skilled
you know,
trades, are there. Vocational yeah. trades mm-hmm. are great. Let's take a short break. We're going to come back and finish the conversation with Dr. Geneva Stark, and we'll be right back after this message.
Louisville Central Community Centers is celebrating 75 years of service to the community. LCCC is officially announcing the 75-year challenge and pledge. Join in the celebration and pledge your support by donating $75 today. Your donation goes directly to support the families we serve daily. Mail your donations to LCCC, 1300 West Muhammad Ali, 40203, call 502-853-8821, or log on to LCCCnews.org.
Are you ready to make a real impact in your community? Look no further than AmeriCorps Vista's Russell Neighborhood Capacity Building Project at LCCC. Become a Vista Community Impact Ambassador. Become a catalyst for positive change. Picture yourself working hand-in-hand with local leaders, organizations, and residents to empower the Russell neighborhood. As a Vista volunteer, you'll play a vital role in creating lasting solutions to address poverty and inequality. Your dedication will help build a stronger, more vibrant community for everyone. Make a difference, make connections, and make memories that will last a lifetime. Join the AmeriCorps Vista team at LCCC's Russell Neighborhood Capacity Building Project today. Visit our website at lcccnews.org. To learn more and apply. Be the change you want to see in the world. Become AmeriCorps Vista Community Impact Ambassador, where your passions meet action.
Welcome back. This is Kevin Fields of LCCC, continuing our conversation with Dr. Geneva Stark with the University of Louisville. And she is sharing a lot of information with us about the issues around public education, both in the K-12, JCPS world, but also in the post-secondary world, because she works at the University of Louisville. And Dr. Stark, I'd like to maybe transition the conversation into some of that work that you do at University of Louisville. I know you work with the community engagement, your community engagement fellow. But let me remind our listening audience, too, that our lines are open here at WLLV. And the number hasn't changed since the last time you heard it. The number is 502-571-1240. The lines are open. You're welcome to call in with questions or comments. But Dr. Stark, talk about University of Louisville. Mm-hmm. Go Cards.
Go Cards.
Right.
Give me a C.
Yeah,
hey,
we don't want to talk basketball.
Yes.
Yet, right? I think that we heard the basketball team lost to who they lose to. Her.
We're not going to talk about that. Indiana
Wesleyan. Let's not talk about that.
Let's not talk about that. Indiana Wesleyan.
It was a preseason.
Preseason.
Yeah. It doesn't count.
I heard the basketball player, one of the players, say, "Well, at least it didn't count."
That's right. Well, that's right. Yeah.
But also, I'm looking forward to the Lady Cards because I'm a season ticket holder.
There we
for
go.
The Lady Cards.
Lady Cards. There we go. It's still Go Cards.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of basketball, what about Bobby Knight, man? It's moment of silence for Coach Knight, all right?
Moment of silence for Coach Knight. Amen.
Rest in peace, Bobby Knight.
Absolutely. And
Robert Montgomery Knight. Mm-hmm. Yes.
He was an icon, and he touched the lives of many players, you know, those who went on to the NBA, but also those who are coaching right now, like Mike Woodson, who was one of his players, who's now the head coach at Indiana. So he made his mark. He was a servant.
He
made an impact.
And I love hearing Isaiah Thomas talk about his coach. And I'm sure I can imagine Isaiah's going to speak at his home going, because every time he talks about coach, he talks about the fact that he made him the player and the person that he became. Mm-hmm. And he's an icon for sure.
Absolutely. Hey, and as we talk about the University of Louisville in the College of Education, currently right now I'm a clinical professor at the University of Louisville. I teach classes in diversity, equity, inclusion, diversity in the workforce, adult education, and also ed leadership, you know, as well. Because as we talk about diversity, equity, inclusion, if we talk about people who are aspiring to be leaders, then one of the things that they have to do and must do is to be able to know their constituents. They need to know their employees. And to get the best out of their employees, they need to first be able to go through or know what diversity, equity, inclusion, the sense of belonging is. Because all too often what happens is people are in positions of power, but they are not leaders. Hear me again. There are many people who are in positions of power, but they are not leaders. You know? And so therefore, the goal is to be able to equip these individuals with the skills necessary to become leaders in whatever, you know, workplace or organization that they're working in. But also work in community engagement, that the College of Education has signature partnership schools. And those schools are Atkinson, Cochrane, Portland, Shawnee, Westport Middle School, Central High School, Shawnee. And when we talk about signature partnership schools, that means that the university works closely with these schools, again, to provide access and resources. For many of the schools that I mentioned, university professors have their classes in these school buildings, and most of these schools are in the West End. Because all too often, what happens is that when people see when there's crime or different things happen, there's cast the negativity is cast on a community. And so therefore, pre-service teachers, they're like, oh man, I don't want to go there. They're afraid. But with university professors having their classes on campus, then those students get a chance to see, whoa, this is not as bad as I thought it was. You know. And so they get a chance when there are vacancies, they get a chance to apply for those vacancies, and because they are now comfortable with those schools. Because for many of those schools, the turnover is very, very high. But and when new teachers come in, many times they go to the schools that have the most challenges. But if they're working in those schools anyway, then they become familiar, they become vested, and they want to be a part of those schools. And so the University of Louisville has provided that opportunity of signature partnership schools. And so that has been wonderful. They're in the process of reconceptualizing what that means, because and we all need to look at how do we reimagine organizations or systems we have in place. Because COVID-19 has taught us a whole lot. Now that we cannot do the same thing we did 2 years ago, three years ago,
the COVID pandemic, as well as the civil unrest pandemic, taught us a lot, wouldn't you say? Especially in that area that you're talking about around the DEI, because, you know, as a civil rights, I was born in the civil rights movement, I'm an advocate, but we got a new infusion of energy and a new infusion of sensitivity coming off of 2020. With the whole George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, the racial unrest that came with that. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about DEI. You said you teach that in the college environment. First of all, how do we get in your classes? How can people learn about your classes?
They can, I'm on a schedule. They can apply, you know, to say, I want to be in Dr. Geneva Stark's class.
Okay, so you're teaching that class.
Yes.
So the ultimate question, though, is, you know, I serve as the chair of DEI for the Rotary Club. And one of the things we've been talking about at our committee is this whole idea of DEI fatigue and this anti-woke movement. And I bring it up all the time because at the Rotary Club, it's predominantly white. And, you know, if anybody's going to get fatigued with DEI, it's white folks saying, we're tired of that. Mm-hmm. So how do you keep, well, first of all, what's your take on DEI fatigue?
Okay.
And then how do you address it?
Okay. What has happened is that it's become weaponized, that a reason not to look at a Kevin Fields, to not look at Geneva, to not to try to minimize, marginalize, and devalue who we are as people. You know? And again, when we talk about DEI fatigue, then what's the problem? Why is that a problem for you to be able to see me for who I am? And also to be able to hear my narrative. Because most often or many times people will say, oh, that didn't really happen to Kevin. That can't be true, you know. But you know your story. They have not walked in your shoes. So it is important, you know, for organizations, for people as individuals, to be able to see people for who they are. Mm-hmm. Many times people say, well, oh, I don't see color. But that's a problem because I want you to see me. You need to see me for who I am, mm-hmm. you know. And so when they say woke, you know, and all of this came about is because during the Breonna Taylor and George Floyd protests, there were as many white individuals out there as there were black in many places. And so 44, the person who was holding that position as president, mm-hmm. they saw that like, oh my goodness, mm-hmm. these people are woke. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. it wasn't about being woke. It's about having a caring heart. Mm-hmm. It's about love for people. When you see someone who sat on someone's neck for 9 minutes and 46 seconds, how can you not have a heart? And so as a result of that, you know, or you, someone breaks in someone's house and begins shooting, and as a result that Breonna Taylor is not here, then as they were able to see what we've been seeing, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. but there were cameras mm-hmm. there to record what happened. Mm-hmm. And so as a result of that, it's like, oh my goodness. Same thing, you go back to Emmett Till when his mother put the picture in Ebony, mm-hmm. when the world could be able to see it. Mm-hmm. Then they were now able to see the things that we experience every day. And so it's not so much about fatigue, you know, the our black fatigue or being DEI, we're tired of hearing that. Why are you tired of hearing that? You know, because as people of color, we carry burdens with us every day. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When there's, you know, mass shootings, just as we had one in Maine, many times we talk about black males, but 90% of the mass shootings in this country have happened by white males.
Yeah. Just had one in Maine.
But when they see you, they're going to flinch,
yeah.
hold their purse,
yeah.
or they're going to minimize and marginalize who you are yeah. as a person. So in the deep diversity, equity, and inclusion classes, it's about how do we help people to see what they can't see.
Right.
You know? And sometimes people live where they live, but we all have biases, mm-hmm. you know, to look at our implicit biases, look at our unconscious biases, but also to be able to recognize it for what it is and say, I have not, and I've made a mistake, you've made a mistake, but let's keep going. Because also when we see that, then we learn about other cultures. And it's about, we're living in a global society, mm-hmm. global, you know. And so with that, we have people from all walks of life. So my goal is always to be able to share, to empower, to uplift, but also to be able to ask, to answer questions for people who's struggling with how to say what they need to say without being offensive. Mm-hmm. Because again, some people are going to not know. Because if I've lived in rural America all my life and have not been in a situation or in a space with people of color, then I don't know how to really or what to say. And so the question becomes, how do we have these courageous conversations? How right. do we have the courageous conversations to be able to move forward, to be able to see people for who they are? But also, it's about humanity. Mm-hmm. It's about love. It's about hope. And so those are the, well, so in my classes, you know, I teach about how do we move forward.
And you're having those courageous conversations, right?
Absolutely.
I'm just curious on, and I'm sure Herbert might have some thoughts on it too. I'm curious on the kind of reactions you're getting mm-hmm. from your students. And well, who are your students?
Yeah, students are, we have undergraduate students, and many of those people are adults who have gone back to school. You know, we also have, you know, graduate students, you know, individuals who are working at UPS or working at Humana or working in different places who want to have, you know, get the human resource degree, who want to get leadership degrees and leadership experience. So we have a multitude of individuals, but also we have military people from, because it's an online course. So we have people from all over the world, all over the country that can be in those courses as well. Mm-hmm. And so they're looking, they're aspiring to become leaders. And I said, again, I want, and I always emphasize to them, as they've all seen, every person is in a position of power. It's not a leader. Mm-hmm. Who do you want to be? Mm-hmm. You know, what do you want to become? And how do you support your people? You mean your subordinates to be able to allow them to follow you? You know, because that's important as well.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts, Herb? Questions?
No, I don't have any questions. I have a comment, though. I would say to the community to find a way to get this car passed in your home. Today's car pass, so you when the kids come along, come home from school, you have homeroom homework, and homework would be listen to this car pass. Because Geneva, I mean, you brought a lot of knowledge, and I think every young person, old person in the community needs to know exactly what you said today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's my challenge to the community, right? Is, you know, find a way to get this at home and do some homework tonight.
Amen.
Throughout the month, you know what I mean. Let's do it. Let's have a great Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. and with some of the food that we got today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. And to elaborate a little bit on what Herbert's saying, and it's kind of our next segue here, the importance of community engagement around these important issues mm-hmm. that we're talking about.
Absolutely.
Education, as Herbert says, the vaccine is solving a lot of problems, but how do we make sure we keep education paramount? In our community and in our households, mm-hmm. and Dr. Geneva, let us. What's the key to effective community engagement? What are you doing? What is the university doing? But what can we do mm-hmm. As a community to be engaged in this whole discussion on education?
Okay, and we have to know and understand that education is the foundation of who we are. We can't go anywhere without an education, and once we have it, no one can take it away from you. You know, and continue to learn, continue to grow, to continue to know that we don't have all the answers, but we can seek the answers. Because if someone asks me a question, I say, "Well, I may not know today, but I'll find out." But also, in getting deeper into the community engagement piece, as I, Dr. Cunningham, Henry Cunningham, and I just went to two conferences. You know, one of the conferences last year, the speaker was so profound, and that message continued to carry with me. Many universities sit in the middle of communities, and sometimes urban communities. Mm-hmm. But there's an invisible wall mm-hmm. that's up. And when that wall is up, then are you telling the community they can't come in or you can't go out? And we need to make sure that when we talk about community engagement, that it's reciprocal, that it's a win-win, not only for the community and organization, but also for the university. Mm-hmm. So if LCC is doing something, then we can have some scholars to be able to do the research on that and be able to help and support that work. If we have someone that's at the Louisville Urban League or many other community organizations, mm-hmm. then we have scholars in the community at the university that can help and support them to be able to have the data mm-hmm. on that, to be able to do the research on that, and to be able to make sure there's an impact. But it has to be reciprocal.
Absolutely.
We can't allow people to go into, and it's happened too many times, where people will go into communities and say, "We're coming here to fix you."
Yeah.
Well, we're not in the business of fixing. It has to be reciprocal, but also we need to hear and listen to what the community has to say so that it can be a win-win for both parties.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. absolutely. But I like your focus on community organizations being engaged. and working with institutions like University of Louisville. Mm-hmm. We're working with U of L, we're working with Simmons, mm-hmm. working with Kentucky State, mm-hmm. working with as many post-secondary groups as we can to create that pipeline effect of mm-hmm. getting more kids out of the community into these mm-hmm. post-secondary roles and knowing that they got to be strong academically to get there mm-hmm. while they're in JCPS and other K-12 environments.
And the key is, how do we make sure that communities know that,
yeah.
that those opportunities exist? Because it's not much enough just for the opportunities to exist. We need to make sure that they know that they exist and be able to take advantage of it. Because sometimes we have to walk people through that process
mm-hmm.
because of fear, because of prior experiences. So sometimes we have to walk our students,
mm-hmm.
our parents, through those organizations that provide those opportunities so that they can be able to feel comfortable
mm-hmm.
In moving forward.
So I'm going to give you a loaded question here, Doc.
Oh, don't be too.
It's safe, but let's say you are the czar of education in our community and you have your magic wand. Let's say you're the education fairy and you're going to wave your magic wand and you're going to make the whole situation around education in our community a perfect scenario. What is the vision that you would want to see happen? How do you make it a perfect scenario? And then how do you measure the success of it?
Okay. Well, the magic wand would be, first of all, we need to make sure, and I ask the question to many educators, you know, why did you go into education? What was your purpose of going to education? Because it can't be because of the schedule. Yeah. And many times people are going to say that, oh, because I want to make a difference. I want to make an impact. And I ask them, are you still there 5 years later, 10 years later, 15 years later? Where are you now to make sure that we are the best people who want to become teachers, who are teachers and making an impact? You know, and sometimes we have to reassess who those individuals are. And again, to see if they still are. Also, another thing I will look at, pre-service teacher programs. I want to make sure that we have the courses necessary to grow those individuals who want to become teachers. Are we providing them with all the resources needed to be successful? Because many times in the research has indicated, there's many articles that say that pre-service universities not preparing teachers for the classes they're walking into. How do we make sure, barring the politics, you know, and the stuff, how do we make sure that we're preparing teachers for the classes they're walking into? You know, and then we're talking about communities. How do we make sure that parents and well, first of all, making sure the opportunities present themselves for pre-kindergarten so that they can be ready. They can be kindergarten ready when they walk into those classes. And that if we have family that needs support system, that we provide those support systems so that we don't blame kids. You know, and right now we're in the process of, we blame kids, we blame parents, we blame communities. We have to get out of the business of the blaming and look at what can we do in terms of providing opportunities. So my magic wand would be a number of different people who have to play a role in what happens in our system. Because, again, it's a global, you know, society. But also there has to be accountability once they get into those roles. And, in all administrators, why are you here? Yeah, because when you're here, you're supposed to be representing that school and that community. I took pride in my work at Western High School because I represented not only the students, but also the community at large as well. And so we need leaders who are not afraid. You know, if you're afraid, then this is not for the faint at heart, because you have to be able to lead with a purpose and be able to let individuals know that you are there for their education, and that in education is important, and there's a sense of integrity that goes along, you know, with that. So my magic wand would be a number of people have to be involved in this. And also we look at not 40% of our students reading at the proficient level,
mm-hmm.
but how about 85, 90, 100% of our students reading at that level?
That's,
you know,
right.
Because 40% is not good enough. You know, 35, 38% is not good enough. 50% is not good enough. We need them, because that means we have casualties.
Yeah.
We cannot afford to have casualties.
Yeah, and I think to your point about your earlier point about the test scores, this education shouldn't be just about getting kids ready for a test, because first of all, the test scores themselves are not a measure of intellect. It only measures how they did on the test, you know, and who knows what they were thinking when they did the test. They could have been thinking about last night's basketball game while they're sitting there doing the test. And so the thing is, were they fully engaged and fully motivated and fully prepared to do their absolute best? If that's the case, then yeah, the test scores should be, you know, representative of the intellectual and the academic preparedness of the student. But the problem is these test scores, these negative test scores, begin to label our kids. And we know that that's not who they are. But when you start making them feel like that's who they are by the way that they're treated, then, yeah, you're going to have some kids to kind of zone out. So we want to really continue this conversation. You know, I'm a passionate person when it comes to education as well. I agree that, you know, I wouldn't have had the opportunities coming from the background that I come from that I've had, you know, with a career if it weren't for education. It just would not have happened and wouldn't be the leader that I am today if it was not for just education. I'm still a student. I love the process of learning. And so I think that's, you got to, but that comes from motivation. It don't come out of a book. You got to just have intrinsic motivation and desire and drive to want that. And I think that's the difference between high achievement and underachievement, is how motivated are you? Because I know for a fact that for many of my academic years, I did just enough just to go from one grade level to another. But it was some moments in my life that flipped the switch and say, no, I'm going to do my absolute best. And so I think, but that's intrinsic motivation. So next conversation we have, we're going to talk more about what do we need to do to motivate these kids, right?
What are we going to do to motivate our students, our young people? We have to first let them know that we care about them.
Amen. Yeah.
You know, because it's not, there's a saying that people don't know how much you know until they know how much you care, you know, and our students need to know how much we care for them, how much we love them. And that also comes from the family. You know, we have many families that are broken for a number of different reasons, you know, but the question becomes, how do we take all the positive things that, you know, that's available, you know, and pour into them, pour into families and students so that they can feel inspired, they can feel energetic, you know, because we do have programs like OBAP, you know, and other programs who are giving back, and they've been doing this for 21 years. Given their free time to for a community, for school, for students to be able to be successful. So we need to look at how can we highlight these programs? Because many times I didn't know the program existed until it was like 15 years later.
Yes.
You know, I've been volunteering for the last 10 years. But how do we magnify these programs? You know, expose individuals to these programs so they can get excited about these programs and opportunities that exist, because they are there. But we have to be the driver of that. And so instead of the news focusing on, you know, on the blood, you know, let's focus on the positive things that's happening in our community. And I was the person over the Black Student Unions, you know, in JCPS when I was there. Amazing young people doing amazing things, you know. And so
we have people that can do. You are amazing. Thank you again for spending this time with us on Russell on the Move. Our hour is coming up on itself here. And we just want to say thank you, Dr. Geneva A. Stark, a clinical professor and community engagement fellow at University of Louisville. Thank you for being here on this broadcast this morning. We're going to continue the show next week. And when we come back next week, Herbert, we're going to have Herbert, he's going to have his buzzard shirt on. We're going to have a conversation about some buzzards, you know, and we're going to have fun next week. As we always do, we had fun today. But next week, we're going to be celebrating Daryl Drake, who is a friend of ours, who will be inducted into the Western Kentucky University Athletic Hall of Fame on next weekend. Posthumously, Daryl's no longer with us, but his brother Derek is going to be on the call with us, and we're going to have some close friends on the call with us. We're just going to have a day of brotherhood and fellowship and celebrating our dear brother. We know Daryl. He's a native of Louisville. He went on to, as a athlete, to a stellar career and as a coach. And, you know, when he passed away in 2019, he was still coaching at Pittsburgh for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And we're glad and honored that Western Kentucky University saw fit to install him in the Hall of Fame down there on this homecoming weekend, which is next weekend. So until next week, we want to ask our listeners to stay tuned, stay abreast, stay safe, and we'll be back next week. God bless you.
Thank you for listening to Russell on the Move, LCCC's weekly affairs update on Russell and surrounding neighborhoods in West Louisville. We hope you enjoyed our show and took away news you can use to help lift your spirits and increase your prosperity. Join us next week as we continue our mission, equity advancement and community empowerment. For now, be safe, be blessed. Until we meet again, the LCCC, leading with vision, educating on economic mobility, advancing equity, developing quality.